episode two of such a this big podcast that we haven't found a name for yet.
Mystery podcast.
This is episode two. Intro wise, I think we just start with the news. Everyone knows who we are by now if you haven't watched the first episode. But news. So what I found across the board with a bunch of different businesses that have been listed and that are popular right now was subscription businesses.
Yeah.
Now, to name a few, we have Hostage Tape. I don't know if you've seen that one, the mouth tape.
Yeah.
They've got nose tape. They've got everything. And it's all subscription. I'm subscribed. Like, I love it. Same with, like, these earplugs. Like, I think it's called Loop.
Yep.
Literally.
Earplugs. Yep.
And they're pretty great. I use them as well.
Because they fall out.
Yeah, well, and I think if they just like hygiene-wise, they should be subscription. Right. That's their case. But also, consumable gummies, like caffeine gummies. Nicotine gummies.
I've seen the creatine gummies. Yeah.
All these different, and I'm seeing subscription on the rise, which is a good thing because I love those businesses. Why do you think now subscription is like picking up?
I think because we're seeing this move towards brands. Brands are able to acquire customers with lower initial average order values as your ability to kind of get reach on Amazon, on TikTok shops. TikTok shops is great for kind of getting sourcing an initial order very inexpensively. And then if you can get them into a subscription, that's fantastic. And like it's gotten a lot easier to set up a subscription seamlessly. Like you've got, I mean, historically you've had like Recharge, but now you've got like Loop makes it super, super easy for people to set up subscriptions. So I think it's easy to set up a subscription business. Like, these are all brands that have built up really excellent organic.
Yeah.
Like they've done a phenomenal job on kind of like communicating the benefits of the product. And they've been acquiring tons of customers. So it's not.
And influencer marketing.
And influencer like marketing. So I'm not considering that like organic. Like not pay per, but not going on a CPM type basis. So I'm looking at that and thinking, great, if you can acquire customers fairly affordably, and then you can drive long-term value through just like subscription or just through repeat purchases by doing really good direct mail, email, SMS. Like that gross margin profile over time looks fantastic. The other thing is, I think e-commerce is beginning to mature in a way that it's being looked at by some banks. Yeah. Smarter banks are now understanding the business model. Yeah. So if you've got a lower AOV, so you need to acquire customers unprofitably, but you've got a really great baked in subscription model.
Yeah.
Historically, that was going to get VC financed. We've seen that doesn't work. Like consumer businesses simply are, they don't have the retention metrics like software does.
Like
they don't have the margins. It doesn't make sense. So we're going back to what business, in my mind, it makes a lot more sense. You actually have to understand what is your gross margin over time. If you can look at it and say, okay, I'm going to get the average customer $100 of gross margin out of them over 6 months, 12 months, and my initial acquisition cost averages this, well, now you've got some calculable room that you can afford to finance customer acquisition. And if banks can understand that, you're just saying, okay, this is fairly replicable. I just need to add $5, $6 of interest cost to the fund this customer acquisition because I know I've built this replicable system that I'm more or less on the average customer, I will get this amount of money back.
Yeah.
So I think that e-commerce maturity as an industry and moving away from traditional venture finance, like it really can express these businesses in a spreadsheet. So it becomes fairly compelling.
Yeah.
Again, if you're able to acquire customers on a blended basis, not too expensively because you're not entirely reliant on paid ads.
Yeah. And I mean, I look at the Hostage Tape, I'm like, first, I found them through Jocko Willink.
Okay.
So massive influencer for his niche. I bought, like, you get like a 10 pack.
Yeah.
And it's just tape.
Yeah.
Now I use like paper like sticky tape.
Yeah.
From the pharmacy. It's like $1.
Yeah.
And I paid $22 for a pack of 10. From the Hostage Tape thing.
Why?
And the nostril ones, which were another 20.
Okay.
And $20 for shipping it to here to Spain.
Right.
I just paid $60 for something I could have gotten for $5 at the pharmacy. I'm like, why did I do
that? What's doing it for you?
Firstly, it doesn't work as well. The paper tape doesn't actually work.
Okay.
The hostage shape is quite a thick tape. It's like that thick, and it goes over your whole bloody mouth.
Okay.
You cannot breathe through your mouth. You are held hostage. And the nose tape's like, okay, that's cool. Now, looking at my dumb 25-year-old brain, I'm like, why did I buy this? I'm like, it looks cool. The nose thing. Hormozy is doing it. I'm like, I gotta be doing this now. Okay. Number two, I'm like, okay, I do want to sleep better. Like, I do want to solution to the sleep, like seriously, to my sleep. Number three, I'm like, all the cool dudes are using it. If Hormozy uses it, I'm like, but if Jocko's using it, I'm like, all right, this guy can, you know, has integrity. Sure. I can respect what this guy's saying. I'm like, let me give it a crack.
Okay.
And I'm like, okay, $60, not so, like the nostrils thing for me, don't need it. Doesn't really do it for me. But the mouth thing, yeah, that really works. So I'm like,
so it is better. There's like product mode there too.
Yes. I still, every time I think about it, I lose my mind that I'm paying so much
for paper. Sticky paper.
Yeah. And like at the end of the day, it's like, my sleep is marginally better.
Okay.
It's not amazingly better. But now that I'm subscribed, I'm like, I might as well be doing it.
You're sort of affiliated with this like overall lifestyle.
Exactly. It is a lifestyle.
What they've done.
I think I want to say that Hormozy actually has a piece of equity in it, but I'm not sure.
I don't doubt that. We were talking about this before. Like, just, I think we're going to see more and more people with reach are going to be able to take equity in these businesses because of the value that organic acquisition adds.
Exactly.
Like, you give up a bit of equity, you would have had to give up that equity. Historically, you had to give up that equity to a venture capitalist who you'd then plow all of their money into Facebook ads.
Exactly.
So if you can actually get ongoing value creation instead of renting attention from a paid media platform financed with your venture capital dollars, if you can own attention by giving away that equity to build with someone who's going to ongoing mention it. Now, the dark side of that is if your brand, fortunately for Hostage Tape, they're doing very well, to my understanding. Yeah,
and they've also diversified across multiple influences. Right. So no one holds so much power. So they've
placed a couple different bets. If your brand does not end up crushing it, I suppose it's a binary outcome regardless, but you run the risk of ending up with kind of like a zombie brand.
Yeah.
It's not crushing it. Why would the person with influence, they could promote anything. They have X amount of real estate. They need to dedicate that time to things that are going to make them money. If it's not crushing it, then you're going to lose the attention in the portfolio. Yeah,
I agree. Another, so this is kind of in the category of news in terms of trending niches.
Oh, yeah.
So eSIMs, I know how much you've been using eSIMs, but they popped up, like this whole category has come up in the last year.
Yes.
Now, I've seen one of the biggest eSIM companies listed for sale.
Really?
And it was at 20 mil, now they delisted. Because I think actually it's going really well.
Okay.
Now, I used to get a new eSIM, a new SIM card everywhere I travel.
Right.
And it's a pain in the ass.
Yeah.
Now so what I first found was like, okay, these random internet companies are doing eSIMs. Now, every big hotel chain and airline are offering eSIMs to upsell from their, whatever they say. Yes. That should, I mean, I assume most telecommunication companies are making great money from their customers who are staying in their country. But that, whatever, 5% that was coming from travelers, that doesn't exist anymore because of this. This is like the standard brick and mortar old school telecommunications world is getting shaken up in the travel category, at least for this, through eSIMs, right? And I'm like interested because I've seen like, there's like multiple eSIM providers that are just small. They're not attached to any big company.
Yeah. I think it's fundamentally like digital dropshipping, right?
Yeah.
They're not, I think they're just providing, like the eSIM, they've not done any technical innovation. Yeah. They're just the front end reselling.
Yeah, exactly. Else they're like, it's like, and use this like Vodafone Austria for like a SIM card to be data, internationally data, providing data internationally to like Serbia.
Right.
So I'm like, that's genius.
Yeah.
I mean, all the other companies are going to catch up. I'm interested to see what direction that goes in. But the fact that I saw, I think it was the biggest one listed, I'm just interested to see what's happening in this niche because it's a very old category that hasn't really been shaken up too much. Like, as soon as mobile phones came out, okay, they're charging data, they're charging minutes, and then charging, you know, text. But now, for eSIM, I'm like, those retailers who were selling SIM cards, that's over now.
Oh, for sure.
Like,
that's game over. What becomes Yeah, my only experience with an eSIM was like 2 or 3 years ago. It was terrible because it like switched over my phone number. Mm. Like it was just not a good experience. It still does that. Okay, so it's like, I don't know if, again, it was a couple of years ago, but I didn't have the best like user experience doing it. That was also when I had a Canadian phone plan. And for my Canadian friends out there, you will empathize with this. Our phone plans in Canada, like it would blow your mind how terrible it is.
Yeah.
So expensive. Roaming is like 10, I think some countries are like $20 a day.
It's actually the same in Australia, and I assume it's because of the size of these bloody countries.
Warm.
I assume it's because they have to set up like range and area of the whole bloody massive country.
And because it's making crazy profit, I'm sure.
And that's the thing, their profit margins are insane.
They're crazy.
Insane.
Yeah.
And I hope this just makes them more competitive, right?
Well, moving to the UK has been interesting because now that my provider in the UK, unlimited data, which I did not have back in Canada. I don't even think that was an option for most of my time living in Canada. I have unlimited data, unlimited everything, almost anywhere in the world. There's like a handful of countries. So I didn't have to do shit when I came here. I pay I used to pay $200 Canadian a month. Now I pay the equivalent of $50 Canadian a month. Unlimited calls. So what becomes interesting, like eSIMs, interesting. I wonder if ultimately though, like 5, 10 years now, I'm worried about that category long term because I assume that ultimately all providers are just going to have like global kind of reach,
and so, which is about bloody time.
Right.
Like they've had the capabilities, but they're just trying to hold on to their profit margins this whole time.
It's what makes sense. So interesting category. Yeah. I hope that lots of people get in, make a bunch of money. Am I looking to like buy businesses in that space? I think it scares the shit out of me because like truly one decision made by your national carriers and like the relevance goes down massively. Like I'm gonna stick on this phone plan for as long as I can.
Yeah.
Even if I leave the UK. It's super convenient.
Yeah, no, I agree. Last trending niche I wanted to talk about was kind of 2-part 1. Pickleball. And this running club craze. I know we chatted a bit about how I'm setting up a running club brand in Greece and Cyprus, but there is this trend, one to health. I mean, it's kind of been a big wave trend over the years, but pickleball has gone in.
It's gone nuts.
It's gone absolutely crazy. We've
seen the following, paddle as well, right?
Yeah, paddle.
Yeah.
Wait, isn't that the same thing?
I don't know. They're similar.
Okay. I think I played paddle like 2 weeks ago.
There you go. So like, I think that space, what's interesting is like trending sports. The other one is like rucking. So that's running, but like with weights. Okay. I really do. It's good. We're seeing more and more of a focus on fitness. And I think we're now able to innovate a little bit more on finding the kind of fitness that you like. I know some people in London, friends of mine, they swear by paddle. Like, I think it's the only exercise that they do. And it's amazing. Like, we should all be able to go out and get exercise. Some people like weights. Some people like paddle.
Mm.
Some people are big runners. Some people now are rucking. I think if you have some degree of reach, there's so much opportunity for like the fitfluencers that have been around for so long and they've only really been able to hawk supplements.
Yeah, the same old
shit. Supplements. Like
yoga mats.
Like the really smart ones are going to start jumping, looking at stuff like pickleball, paddle. A friend of mine owns CrossNet. CrossNet. So like they innovated on sports and like backyard games, like things in fitness. That's interesting. I think you just can make small, and CrossNet, it's not like crazy differentiated.
Yeah.
It's just a little volleyball net, but you know, they made it 4 ways. That's a great little business.
Yeah.
I don't think it's even that little anymore. So
that's big.
It's bigger. So I love the idea of people who have reach in the fitness, who are inspiring people to get out and be fit.
Yeah.
And you can just look at what's trending. There's such an running, just add some weight.
Yeah.
Brilliant. And like,
so do you think that's the way to monetize on these trends, to do products based on like partner up with the influencer, or as an influencer start selling that stuff?
Yeah.
And do it also, like, if you're rucking, if you're getting into, if you like, I want to take over rucking with my bloody like weighted vests, do it, compete, whatever. I agree. And look, with the running clubs, like I said, like I saw that craze, like I joined a running club here in Barcelona. I'm like, yo, this commute, like, it's still early stages. I think it's a very early stage of the whole kind of niche. But, like, the running clubs have always been around, but running clubs that aren't the running clubs, they're social/dating clubs.
Yeah.
Right? That is very new. And that's why, for me, like, and I suggest this to anyone in Europe. I know a couple of people follow me from across Eastern Europe and Europe and Middle East and so on.
Indeed.
Copy things that are working in the West and trending in the West in your country. Like, that's what I'm doing with Greece and Cyprus. I'm like, okay, to my team who is already living in Greece and Cyprus, I'm like, set up a run club under the same brand across Greece and Cyprus.
It's going to work. It's human nature.
And I'm not cramping it. And they're like, how are we going to monetize? I'm like, don't even worry about it.
Yeah.
Don't worry. And also, like, I think my generation and your generation too, we're like, dating sucks.
So hard. This is the same generation, but you're right.
I'm Gen Z.
You are Gen Z.
Yeah.
I'm like a younger millennial. Terrible.
We are so fed up with dating because the system isn't working. Like, going out and meet people in person, my generation is petrified of doing that.
Yeah.
And it's considered weird. Men are scared that we're going to get arrested for saying hello to a girl.
Right.
And then online dating is a travesty because the men are getting like absolutely rinsed price-wise from Tinder and Hinge and all these things. And it's not even working even if you pay. So, like,
and then you see the horror stories from women too. Like,
yeah, exactly. Way worse.
Crazy bananas.
Exactly.
Yeah.
So, and when I realized the first run club I did here in Barcelona, I'm like, wait a second. And I'm trying to go out at clubs and bars in Barcelona. It doesn't really work to meet like-minded people. I'm trying, like, dating apps, I'm trying.
Yeah.
But it just doesn't work. What I realized when I went to this run club at 8 a.m. on a Saturday morning, I'm like, all these people did not go out last night.
No, these are my people.
Yeah, these people care about their health.
Yeah.
They did not go out last night. They probably got 8 hours sleep.
Yeah.
And, like,
these are the kind of people I want to meet.
Everyone I met was, like, a lawyer, a banker, has their own business. I'm like, yo. And, like, I think it's funny, just waking up on time, waking up early is, like, the biggest thing. Not even the other job categories. Yeah. Whatever job you have, I couldn't care less.
Yes.
Like, you woke up at, like, 7, 8, or, like, 6:30 a.m. to get here.
Yeah.
I want to talk to you.
Yeah.
We're going to have something in common.
Totally.
And that's why I monetize it. So, like, you could pay to just, like, hey, you got to pay to be here. You could pay for a coffee. Then the cafe and, like, this 182 people went to this event. They all bought coffees and, like, a little dessert.
For the cafe.
And then they had, like, a little, at the end, everyone got a number. Like, the dude who ran this put a number on everyone's wrist. And at the end, they, like, gave some running glasses away.
Okay.
That company that did the running glasses is getting free the sponsoring. Yeah. So I'm like, there's so many easy ways to do this. Some other ones in the US, they sell shirts and merch and stuff. I think there's even a bigger win somewhere here in that category. But I just like the same thing I did with my first ever businesses with those Facebook groups.
Yeah.
Create the community and then figure it out.
Yeah, it'll be totally fine. Yeah. I love this sort of innovation happening in fitness. Mm-hmm. Like, even just looking at these two things next to each other, I'm like, someone is going to make weighted vests optimized for pickleball and paddle. Like, there's going to be something different between the rucking stuff, just have that mobility.
Yeah.
Someone's going to do it. It's not going to be an enormous business.
Yeah.
But it could be a business that just nice niche, puts like 25% on the bottom line every year. They have a nice line.
So, small deals. First business is one of the old ones. 25 years old ornament business.
Oh, yeah.
So the things you put on your Christmas trees. Now, this one's an old one. Again, like I would say baby boomer generation. They're wanting to retire. 4.5 mil valuation, 1 mil EBITDA, high 4.5 multiple. High repeat purchase rates. I like that. Domain authority is 35. It peaked during COVID. Last few years, it's taken a hit.
I see that. It's gone down every year.
Yeah.
So interesting. We got something up for sale that's declining every year.
Yeah.
Okay.
And it's 25 years old. You think there'd be some sort of stability there? That's what most buyers will look for 25-year-old businesses want.
Yeah.
They want a 4.5 multiple, which is insane for a declining business. It's so weird to see like, oh, it's old, so it's automatically worth a high multiple. Well, it's declining. I'm going to lose money on this. I would buy this for 2, maybe, and half of it I would want to sell a finance or earn out.
So interesting. I mean, it's an older business. It's on Wix.
Jesus Christ.
And sales are completed through an e-commerce platform, VTEX. Listen, George, I've been in e-commerce for a while.
What's it called?
VTEX. I've never even heard of this platform. So... Look, that's got to be interesting. Operationally, I think it's going to be a lot of work, right?
Well, you got to put it over to Shopify.
You got to put it over to Shopify immediately. Yeah, absolutely. Harley, that one's for free. This business has got to get over on Shopify.
Yeah. And I don't know, but they're not even... Well, they were signed up. Those brick-and-mortar business brokers.
Okay.
So this experience is going to be terrible to even like try and deal with these brokers. It's going to be terrible. They know nothing about e-commerce.
Contextualized on e-commerce. Okay.
They give you the whole slide on like e-commerce growing across the USA. Dude, we don't need that slide.
No problem. I mean, they've got a modest sort of pay. I mean, look, you're going to have to be acquiring quite a lot of like salaries. These are also, look at this. You've got $12,000 for creative marketing payroll. That's what they're calling it. They've got a marketing consultant, clearly not doing a fantastic job. Yeah. It's declining every year. But these are all pretty low. I imagine that these are all part-time salaries, other than maybe the warehouse manager.
Yeah.
So that's going to be a little bit of a mess to unwind. Yeah, if you can get this business, move it on over to Shopify, convert a lot of this into these kind of part-time contractors, yeah, into people who are paying a little bit more attention. All right, here's your allocation, 25% time, 50%
of our time. Yeah, yeah. So
these are people who are not necessarily spending all their time on this business. I wonder what they're
spending. For the allocation, that salary is still high. For the allocation, though.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, so this is, they've got definitely a high payroll. So that's going to be bringing down their EBITDA. All right, let's get into the financial details here. So gross product sales declining a lot, like declining between 700 to 500,000.
Net profits not so much, right?
Net profits, so their EBITDA margins are increasing, actually, yeah, every year. Just by a bit, by a couple percentage points. And that's mainly going to be reflected in their costs below the line. So yeah, see, their gross margin is actually reducing by about the same amount as their sales.
Big thing to note was 2019 was bought by another company.
It was bought by
another company. Yeah.
And relocated to Ohio.
Okay. Yeah. And then they made these changes, failed. And they're like, let's clean this up to try and ship it off.
Where are all these cost reductions coming from? They're just spending less on marketing every year. So they're just culling the marketing spend.
They're just culling the business.
Which is culling the business.
But they're like, EBITDA.
Yeah, EBITDA's going up a little bit.
Really?
Is how the commercial fees, everything's going down. Everything, it just supports that this is overall revenue declining business. Everything seems to be declining a little bit. What scares me is the seasonality too.
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah.
Like Christmas ornaments. If you had the ability to pick this up for really cheap, move it on over to Shopify.
I would even tell them, like, hey, look, I know you're old school guy. Like, well, the original owners aren't even there anymore. So actually, forget about that. The current owners that bought the business in 2019, I'd say, look, you keep your 10, 15% so that I don't have to buy that.
No.
We're going to sell a finance like 30%. We're going to earn out 30%. I'll buy 40% or 30%, whatever it is up front. We're going to completely change this business and overhaul it. Like Shopify, get rid of probably most of their team, bring in a proper team. Like, it's a full-time job to buy this.
It's a full-time job. What I do like about the business, look at this. Look at what they're doing on this marketing website section. Look what they're doing around direct mail. That's actually, like, it's old-school marketing, but in a way, it's innovative for what a conventional e-commerce or D2C brand is doing right now. They're absolutely crushing direct mail. I think it's just a good reminder for everyone. There is so much opportunity. If you're thinking about your LTV production, because they're talking about their top, their best 30,000 customers consistently produce more than $1 million in sales, and more than 50% of new customers will buy again within 3 years. So if you're taking a long-termist sort of perspective on a business, this is a great domain.
Yeah,
right? It is. If you could move it on over to Shopify, they've clearly got long-term engagement with some set of customers. If you're able to finance the inventory, which, look, it's ornaments.
Yeah.
The COGS on this stuff, super low. If you're able to kind of finance the inventory for the softer parts of the year and potentially look at that LTV engagement, moving it just from direct mail into, I would argue, the more digitally native, easier to spin up type channels like email. I don't know how much people are thinking about SMS for this, but if you go out and engage people just before Christmas when it's time to be getting this stuff.
I assume that also the demographic is older women who probably buy
it. I think they said that, yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. So, I mean, it could be fantastic. You could also like engage like browser level push notifications. Like there's all sorts of little tweaks. Now, for a size of business that this is, how big is this? Net sales last year, just under 5 million. For an EBITDA of 1, like, is the juice worth the squeeze? I think kind of becomes the question.
At the current valuation of 4.5 mil,
Oh, definitely not. I mean, that's bananas.
Exactly.
But we knew that going in.
And dealing with a brick and mortar business, but for an e-commerce business, like I said, is a headache.
Tough. Okay.
However,
no better than me.
They are also, because Sunbelt Business Brokers, they're like a franchise.
Yeah.
Those brokers want to get paid. They don't give a shit about their client, in my experience. And they'll be like, oh, terrible deal. What do you think? They won't say, no, we're going to reject this. I've thrown deals at the door before I even show my client because I know it's not worth their time. It's not a good deal. But they'd be like, yeah, we'll send it to them. We'll see. So all I would do is like, I'd just send a lowball offer with a bit of earn out, a bit of seller financing, a bit of the current owner staying on a bit. But that's it. I'd be like, yeah.
I don't want to open it up on Amazon, open it up on Etsy. People forget about Etsy as like opportunities for kind of more niche seasonal type stuff like this. Etsy could be interesting for this.
Even marketing on Pinterest for this sort of...
Potentially. Pinterest's ad platform is still kind of emerging. I think you probably just lean into the seasonality, go nuts, like just around the time of year that this sort of stuff is relevant. But I'd try to move this also away from having a brick and mortar presence and just see if you can go as low inventory as possible for as much of the year as possible and really just start engaging inventory later in the year. This one, not super terrible, but you're definitely acquiring quite a lot of labor to move this on over to another platform. The multiple's way high. You definitely want to de-risk it with seller financing. So if they're open to that, that could be interesting. But the domain, frankly, fantastic. Fantastic domain. I think anyone with kind of a generalist view of the appetite for seasonality, I know some people who build up portfolios based around like Halloween type stuff, Mother's Day type stuff. This would be a great addition to anyone who's kind of got a stomach for that seasonality. Often those same sorts of aggregators, if you would, they're more like niche, hold co type situations. But those are the same. It would not likely be their first time moving something over from not Shopify and Shopify.
No, 100%.
So could be a good fit for them.
Yeah, I agree. Okay. Next business is a water filter e-commerce business. Trailing 12 months revenue, 600K. Trailing 12 months net profit, about 100K. Valuation, 260K. 11 years in business. Repeat purchase rate of 73%. Now, again, the domain's actually kind of good. But not for what they sell. They sell a bunch of like water adjacent products. Like it's obviously drop shipping. I'm not sure if they're drop shipping, but I think they are. Their products and so on. Yeah, there's not too much info. I just had to prefer the info. It's just a P&L.
Thank you.
Yeah, see, they've given a P&L. Here's an interesting bit. Did you notice at the top? It's actually tied to some person's personal brand. I've never heard of this guy. Let me type his name in. You don't actually see this too often anymore. That's really, really old. Okay, so he's an author. Okay, so sort of like a niche, kind of hokey, crunchy granola, sort of not very digitally native type influencer in the wellness space, presumably tied somehow into... Look, I don't want to yuck someone's yum, but this seems a little bit like pseudoscience.
Yeah,
agreed. I'm gonna say some of the language on the site without identifying the business, but like cellular communication via water.
Now this one is the best one, faceted crystal edition.
I think they're I mean, listen, your general risk here is your own sanity if you're going and like taking on this business. You are really selling nonsense, and look. Unfortunately, there are lots of people who make a ton of money in e-commerce dropshipping nonsense.
Well, you know what's funny? I sold a, maybe 5 years ago now, I sold a horoscope, one of the biggest horoscope news content sites in Australia. I think the biggest, actually. And the guy who ran it was kind of like this. He was like a personal brand.
Yeah.
And kind of like the news, kind of like the weather, like the weather station will give out the weather to the top 5, 6, 7 news channels on TV.
Right.
He would give horoscopes to the top 5, 6, 7 news channels on TV.
This is a good syndication.
So I'm like to him, that's just telling me like the whole thing. I'm like, look, a buyer buys this. They don't have their superpowers. How are they going to do it? I'm breaking his balls a bit. He's like, oh, no, just
This is fine.
This is bullshit. I'm like, all right. We sold it to someone else in the space, but weird one. What is this, bullshitty?
This one smells a little weird. I'm worried also about, like, if this person's personal brand, I might not mean anything to me, but if they're tied somehow into this business, it just doesn't look like they're paying very close attention to it. Like, even in the header, I'm seeing two completely different phone numbers.
Yeah,
that's kind of bizarre. This website looks like it hasn't been updated since 2000. Dude, I was born that year, George. God damn. I don't know. It just doesn't strike me that there's actually any sort of product market fit passion effort put into this. I think that someone was able to get some amount of attention and traffic to their own kind of personal brand. Oh, yeah. Now they're sort of old school water wellness practitioner. I worry about that a little bit, a lot of it. They say extremely impressive 73% return purchase rate. I wonder if that means 73% of people are returning the products.
Yeah, I think that's it's probably these people who are just bought into, what's the word? The lies.
Sure.
They're like, oh yeah, no, I got to keep buying these crystals and all this stuff.
Yeah.
It's weird.
12,000 total email list with 7,800 active engagements. So it's a 7,800 person email list. Yeah. Business has been around for 11 years. You're buying a job.
Yeah.
You're buying a job, baby. If you want to buy this business and you want to just take on running, selling crystals and energizing dinnerware sets, like, dude, I don't know. I think you can source.
I would love an energizing dinner set.
Who wouldn't? It just strikes me that if this is what you're into, I don't know why you'd buy this business.
Yeah.
I think you could probably source most of this stuff yourself. You just go down to the energy stuff store.
Yeah.
Start reselling it. I don't know. I'm not into it.
Okay. So, big one now. The big deal. Founding on Flipper, $13.7 million, 7 years old. So they sell a bunch of different, what looks like to me, looking at their website, dropshipping.
I mean, those pictures are straight up about, they haven't even edited it.
That's what's hilarious to me. I see listings like this, I'm like, you've been around for 7 years, why wouldn't you just take a couple of pictures? That's a grand.
Right.
To do these changes. And because I speak to people like this, and I look at a picture like this, which I assume is half AI, half just really bad Photoshop.
Yeah.
Like, it costs nothing to legitimize your brand a bit more. Where they've got pictures of a person wearing their product, but it's so obviously AI or bad Photoshop. It's just.
But they're paying attention to the business. Like, this offering HSA, FSA payments, that's pretty new. Yeah. So they've got to have something going on there. Like, they're actually paying attention to this business. I mean, it's an enormous price. So I think they're driving actual EBITDA.
They see with some of the, like, just look at the Instagram. They're obviously doing some, okay.
There's really low engagement on the Instagram.
So, and they've basically posted a million photos over 30 days in 2022.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So it's pretty old school strategy. They're just posting a lot of static organic images that are getting no engagement.
Of people that are
doing things.
These aren't like normal. These aren't models they paid. They're just
They're just pulling stock.
Stock images.
Yeah.
The one like half Chinese, half white lady that's on every photo. I saw her like twice in this feed.
Oh, the classic, stock photo lady. I mean, on one hand, good for them. Like, I'm assuming that these numbers have some degree of legitimacy. It's just a reminder, like, there are so many niches that you can get into. And
90% Amazon.
90% Amazon. That makes a ton of sense. Because the D2C website is not it. So I think they probably just got way out ahead on the Amazon listings. They've been around for, it says, 7 years. So they got in at kind of like a good time. Let me look at the financials here. How are they actually doing? They're growing a lot. Like, they grew a lot well over COVID. They grew a lot over COVID. So the growth is slowing down a little bit. A lot of these sales are coming from Amazon. So if someone comes in and like yoinks your listing, that's going to be pretty brutal.
I wonder how many they have. Like how many individual product listings they have.
I don't think any of these products are patent protected or anything like that, given that they're clearly being purchased from Alibaba.
Yeah.
I worry a little bit about someone coming in actually doing a bit of innovation on any of these products and knocking out their Amazon listings. Because then you're going to be losing. Typically with Amazon businesses, it's not that all of these products are crushing. It's probably a couple
listings. But you didn't do that. I think these review numbers from Amazon probably 6,000, 1,800.
Those are definitely from Amazon. If we go in here, oh, they're also managing a crazy amount of stock. Crazy. Wow. Look at all look at all these SKUs. They've got colors for a brace product. Like a joints brace. They've got 9 different colors, and each of those colors comes in 6. Like that's, you're managing. So otherwise, well, no, they can't be drop shipping because it's Amazon. So they're actually managing all of this. How are you drop shipping if it's Amazon?
I mean, that's what it says on Flipboss.
That's a little inconsistent. So that's a little.
They also say the EBITDA is 3 mil when it's 2.7. So the Flipboss listing versus the Flipboss IM is 2 different things.
Yeah. Their gross margin is really variable year over year. Look at that. That's bizarre. That would be a bit of a red flag to me. It goes up 16 to 10 to 16 again. Like, what's going on there? So it's gonna bring up some concern.
I wonder who owns it, because I don't think if this is a 7-year-old business.
Well,
I feel like it has had a different owner along the way.
It looks like it's just 2 founders, started it a while ago. Founders believe in the business and its growth trajectory. They're waiting for the right buyer with the correct acquisition fit. They're open to competitive deal structures.
Yeah, so they don't want to sell.
First stance on their position of majority of cash at close. So look, if are people who are strong Amazon sellers, they've built up something good. It's clearly putting good profit on the bottom. They've probably been taking strong profit out of this business for a number of years now. I don't feel like I often see Amazon businesses putting this much profit on the bottom line. I don't know if I'd necessarily be the one interested in taking this off their hands for the price that they're asking.
How did this apply to them?
Right. That's a good point. We're now through the aggregator boom.
Yeah. And they were doing great during that time.
They were doing fantastic. I wonder if they just held on to it. That price, they probably would have gotten this price.
Oh, yeah.
During the aggregator boom, it's almost a 5x multiple. They would have gotten that easily. And now they waited. And now I don't think they're going to get that.
No chance. No one's got that money to put cash up front.
Oh, I think the aggregator boom and bust showed everyone that Amazon listings are not like real estate. That was sort of the overall hypothesis, right? Is that if you've claimed that real estate, the Amazon SEO, if you would, you're a top listing. And you're kind of there forever. And I think you just have to ask anyone who is in and around any of those Amazon aggregator businesses. That's not remotely true. It's a hyper-competitive platform. There's no barrier to entry.
I had so many sellers that I know who sold to aggregators. They would check in with some of the employees of their brands or the brand managers who worked at, big aggregators. And they all said, oh, yeah, what brand? What product?
Yeah.
The brand managers didn't even know what.
Oh, there's some of them that would get bought and then forgotten about.
Forgotten.
I have a friend who sold to a major one, and then they reached back out to me because I was actually talking about buying their. It was a footwear brand.
Hey.
And I'd actually put in an offer with a close friend of mine, and they sold to one of the big aggregators. And then they came back to us a couple months later, and they're like, it was the biggest mistake we ever made with the brand. The buyer never even contacted their manufacturer, like didn't send out any emails for months.
Because this is what happened. They made the acquisition. They put it on their deck for the next round. They're like,
raised a ton of money. Didn't even matter.
Yeah, we quit.
Yeah, absolutely. So this one, look, I think they've, congrats to these founders. They've built a business that's clearly doing tremendous amounts of profit. I think they're not going to be able to sell for this multiple. I don't know who the buyers are for these sorts of businesses nowadays.
No idea.
I think they probably should diversify out of Amazon if they want to get a price like that. Get this into retail. Like, go on Fair. And
take some false images. Don't just use Alibaba.
Take some actual proper product images. All this AI rendered stuff. Look at this.
That's atrocious.
That guy's legs are jacked.
Yeah, that's cool.
He's vascular as fuck.
Photoshop though.
Yeah.
I see like, I feel like there's untold truths with M&A in buying businesses. The untold truth is like, this business in a sale needs to be more valuable to someone else than you as a seller.
Yeah.
This business is most valuable in the seller's possession instead of a buyer's.
Yeah.
So he's not going to get it sold. Simple as that. He thinks it's worth 3.7 mil. A buyer thinks it's worth six, whatever.
I think it's such an important point. You've really got to think about that for when you're building a brand. I know lots of people who say, oh, I'm building this brand and I want to build it to sell. You got to remember, like, a great business to buy is a great business to own.
Yeah.
People ask me all the time, like, oh, why haven't you sold Rockwell? It's like, dude, I built up a fantastic business.
Yeah.
I'm actually much happier, and it financially makes a lot more sense for me to hang on to the business. Yeah. Then exit. Not every single business needs to be some sort of exit timeline.
Yeah.
So I get it. You've been doing it for 7 years. I think another path for a business like this, if you're putting, 15%+ on the bottom line with your Amazon business, go out and hire. There's tons of Amazon experts out there. What's wrong with going out and hiring someone to run this thing forever? Go enjoy your life. You're probably going to make more in profit than you do on the interest that you get, or the dividend payouts, or even the stock appreciation that you get, even if you could invest 100% of what you get out of this sale, which you never will because of capital gains taxes. So taking creative accounting out of it, because you shouldn't do that. But yeah, I don't know. Seems like if it's such a great business, it's growing every year. Everyone, just don't forget, you're allowed to hang on to businesses. Yeah. You don't have to sell everything just because that's what startup culture over the last 10 years told you.
That's the weird thing I tell a lot of sellers. Like, sellers will come to me, referred or otherwise, and then like, I'm thinking about selling. I'm like, they tell me a bit about the business. I'm like, you're 3 years old, you're killing it.
Yeah.
Or hold on to it. Come to me every year and we'll check in. I'll tell you if it's worth it. Like, sellers, especially coming to me in 2024 with terrible rates, terrible luck, I'm like, don't. You should buy, maybe, but don't sell.
Yeah.
Cool. Okay, well, that's the episode. We have other episodes coming. So let's crack on, and we will see you in the next episode.